House and Judiciary come to order. Today is Monday, April 20th, 2015. So as everybody knows, we have a very busy schedule today. I will announce a few things we're going to carry over. House Bill 2315, House Bill 2224, House Bill 2425, House Bill 2571, House Bill 2647, House Bill 3040, House Bill 3437, House Bill 3498, House Bill 2356, and House Bill 3388. Bills that are not...
What's that last one, Jeff?
3388.
That's 10 of them.
Keep up this pace.
All the ones are yellow.
2324 is not going to have a hearing. We have some bills that we're going to run work sessions, and we plan to move to Ways and Means. I'll open a work session on House Bill 2002.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, House Bill 2002 comes to this committee from Representative Frederick Buckley and Kenny Geyer. This is the profiling bill. There is a Dash 2 amendment before the committee. The Dash 2 amendment defines law enforcement and profiling. It requires law enforcement agencies to adopt policies prohibiting profiling and establishes a timeline of October 1st of this year to establish those policies. It also establishes that the Law Enforcement Contacts Policy and Data Review Committee will be the repository for profiling data and establishes a timeline of October 1st of this year. The Dash 2 amendment also establishes a work group. We have a fiscal light. We have the paperwork we need. And with the Dash 2 amendments, it is we can move it to Ways and Means.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 2 amendments into House Bill 2002.
Representative Williamson moves the Dash 2 amendments in House Bill 2002. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2002 with as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Williamson moves House Bill 2002 as amended. Is there any discussion?
Yes.
Okay. Please. Representative Post.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Chair Barker. I really appreciate there was a lot of work that's been going into this by a lot of different people, and I really appreciate that. And I understand the root of what this bill is about, but I have a problem from the very beginning of the root of this bill, and so I just want to – I'll save anything else for if it goes to the House floor, any other comments, but at this point I'm going to be a no on this.
Okay, thank you, Representative. Representative
Wilson. Okay, well, Mr. Chair and committee members, I'm going to support House Bill 2002 with the Dash 2 amendments, but there's a couple things that I feel like I need to share here. I find it a little odd and could very easily be difficult to have two avenues in order in which an individual who wants to file a complaint could file a complaint. You know, the agency and then also this law enforcement contacts policy and data review committee. I think that could bog down the system because to some degree, and I understand that the law that we're looking at creating here would be that the committee itself would submit a complaint to the respective agency in a timely manner. But timeliness has a lot to do with this as well for responding to these types of incidents, especially if you have a member within your own agency that you're struggling with, and all of a sudden this surfaces that you could immediately respond to it rather than having to go through a second-hand process. So that's one thing that bothers me with this whole thing. Creating this committee, the review, and having suggestions and recommendations for the 2016. We're going to pass this, move this forward, and potentially hit the floor after Ways and Means moves it toward, you know, the end of the session, whenever. A lot of people are going to be gone that are identified as part of this committee. you know, for the summer. I sure wouldn't want to be around. So that's going to kind of slow things down once again to really hit the ground running come February. The other thing is, you know, just generally, I'm not a real fan of a bill like this, but I understand it. My old agency, the state police, I can share with you that last year they had 4 complaints that were filed that dealt with racial motivated complaints. All 4 of them were substantiated in favor of the trooper. So it was an immediate response and an investigation. So the system that I think that exists right now does work. I understand the process of this.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Do we have a motion? We put the dash 2 amendments into House Bill 2002. Call the roll, please.
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Representative Greenleaf?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Leininger?
Aye.
Representative Post?
No.
Representative Springer?
No.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Williamson?
Aye.
The Barton?
Aye. Motion carries. Open a work session to House Bill 3503.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, House Bill 3503 comes to this committee from Representative Williamson and Olson. This is the bill relating to the pilot program for certain offenders who have children at the time of the offense. The Dash 1 amendment is before the committee. It establishes the pilot program, which authorizes shared resources for supervising those offenders who had physical custody of a child at the time of the event. The goal is to apply wraparound services with people from expertise, combining community corrections, DHS, and DOC. The amendment clarifies that one is only eligible for the pilot program if they meet the existing conditions of Oregon sentencing guidelines. It also eliminates the early release from prison piece from the underlying bill. There is no revenue impact. Again, this is we have a fiscal light. This will need to be an added referral to Ways and Means because it doesn't have one already.
Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendments into House Bill 3503.
Representative Wimps moves the Dash 1 amendments into House Bill 3503. Is there any discussion? Representative Barton.
Question, I'm sorry to start asking questions with such a big agenda. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. This is the amendments. This would only apply prospectively, correct, i.e. to people who may or may not be incarcerated for crimes that are committed after the effective date of the bill, correct?
Yes. Mr. Chair, I'll answer that. Yes, it's diversion only. Prospective.
Thank you.
Okay. Further discussion? Are there any objections to the Dash 1s? Hearing none, ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3503 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Williamson moves House Bill 3503 as amended, due pass to Ways, prior agreement to go to Ways and Means.
Yeah.
Things are buzzing here. Is there any discussion on that? Are there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. And open a work session on House Bill 3525.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, House Bill 3525, you heard last week in this committee, this is the notario fraud bill, and based upon the testimony we received last Monday, we received some amendments that completely replace the measure and create a 12-member task force on immigration consultant fraud. It requires a study on violations of prohibitions on acting as an immigration consultant without a bar license and the practice of immigration consultants attempting to obstruct persons from reporting such violations. It requires a report to the Legislative Assembly no later than September 15th, 2015. We have a fiscal statement to send this down to Ways and Means, and it's ready to go with the Dash 1s.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendments into House Bill 3525.
Representative Williamson moves the Dash 1 amendments into House Bill 3525. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
I move House Bill 3525 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Williamson moves House Bill 3525 as amended with the due pass recommendation to Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Open a Next item up on the agenda is House Bill 2320. We had it originally scheduled for a hearing, but we are going to just move it with the work session to Ways and Means. If anybody feels they really need to testify, I would allow it, but not. Okay. Open a work session, House Bill 2320.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 23, the Dash 4 amendments into House Bill 2320.
Representative Williamson moves the Dash 4 amendments into House Bill 2320. Is there any discussion? Are there I'm sorry.
What was the amendments?
The Dash 4.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
What do they do?
That was the combination of the two.
Representative Williamson moves the Dash 4 amendments into House Bill 2320. Is there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, one member of the committee has asked that we move this without recommendation because they don't feel like they haven't had enough time. So, Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2320 to the Committee on Ways and Means
without recommendation. Representative Williamson moves House Bill 2320 as amended to Ways and Means without recommendation. Discussion? Seeing none, move the bill. Any objections to moving the bill? Seeing none, so ordered. Okay, 3206. Go to work session on House Bill 3206.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, House Bill 3206 comes to this committee from Representatives Barker, Williamson, Leiniger, and Senator Sprzanski. This is the post-conviction DNA testing bill. There is no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact. The bill authorizes the court to appoint counsel and order DNA testing for any criminal conviction with relevant DNA evidence. It modifies the existing procedures regarding DNA testing and changes the requirements of a prima facie standard in order to obtain DNA testing. The bill, we have all the paperwork in it. It is ready to be moved to the Rules Committee.
All right. We're gonna pass it off.
Why is it going to Rules?
It's not done.
It's going without recommendation, I assume.
Well, that's what we're just trying to figure out. Okay, Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3206 without recommendation to the Committee on Rules.
Representative Williamson moves House Bill 3206 without recommendation to the Committee on Rules. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Representative Post?
Okay, you got me confused again. Okay. Sorry. What exactly are we doing?
We have a bill we're going to move to the Rules Committee. It's
without recommendation.
Does it mean you like it or dislike it?
We're just sending it out there.
More work. Sending it away.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay, you're up.
Okay, that works for me.
Okay. Is there any further discussion? Are there any objections to moving the bill to Rules? I see seeing none, so ordered. Okay, open a work session, House Bill 2356. I'll back up on that one, and we will roll that one over to tomorrow. We open a work session, House Bill 3365.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, House Bill 3365 came to this committee from Representatives Olson, Taylor, Springer, and many, many others. There is currently a Dash 1 amendment before the committee. There is no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact. This is the sex toy bill we heard recently. The Dash 1 amendment does two things. First, it keeps the existing statutes as is, but eliminates specific and generic references to nudity. As you may recall, there was a discussion about at the hearing about whether this language met the constitutional standard of obscenity. It keeps the same prohibitions on making these items available for those under the age of 18. The second thing it does is prohibits both the selling and making visible of sex toys to those who are 14 years and younger.
And to your statute of limitations.
Yes.
Yeah.
Does this still create two different crimes, this amendment?
I can just have a second.
The original bill we heard testimony created both the crime for allowing children into the place where there are sex toys and also the crime of if you've let them in you're selling something, it's another crime. Is this still a...
This, and Chair Barker and Representative Greenleaf, this bill still does that. It modifies the statute in a different way, so all the prohibitions are still covered under ORS 167.080, but it does create prohibitions for those who make these items visibly available to be displayed, and it makes a different prohibition for those who sell to those individuals.
And it still would then be two crimes in which somebody could be convicted and sentences run sequentially, right? I think that was the testimony we heard.
Chair Barker, Representative Greenlick, I think it's possible that someone could be convicted for two separate crimes under the merger, the anti-merger statute. I mean, it is different language. It's two different complete prohibitions that this committee and the past the legislature would intend to become law. So, you know, in theory, it could lead to someone receiving two separate convictions.
Anytime a prosecuting attorney can do that, they have that at their disposal. Seems to me we had in the original statute, it prohibits people from displaying books and other phenomena. Mm-hmm. And this adds two different things. I mean, apparently it's okay to sell a dirty book if you've let somebody under 18 in the place. It's okay to sell it, but it's not okay to sell somebody a sex toy if you've let them in illegally. And I just don't understand the logic behind that. It seems like overkill to me.
There was a lot of concern about the original bill, about the constitutionality of prohibiting the sale. Prohibiting people from being there. They weren't sure whether that was right or not. So this was trying to address the fact that they shouldn't be displayed to children.
But that's still part C of that, yeah, of the original statute. That's a new part of that. And in a different section, it adds a prohibition as if you've let somebody in illegally and you sell them something, you've now created a new crime. That just seems to me to be ridiculous.
And I, Chair Barker, like I think that while someone could, under the way this is written, certainly receive two separate convictions, I think it would be highly unlikely they could receive consecutive sentences given the proximity of time. But I think you're right.
Highly unlikely is not the issue. The issue is it could happen. If you let a 14-year-old into this place and you and sold them a sex toy, you're really a heinous criminal, and you need to be treated severely. I mean, that's the testimony we heard, how awful it is. So I could imagine prosecuting them to the full extent of the law, and maybe under a different law at the same time about not collecting sales tax or something.
Well, getting to your question, though, I mean, potentially, does that exist? Yeah, it could happen. Bottom line, at this point right now, lowering it to age 14, we're really focused on trying to, you know, just protect the children at this level.
Well, I think a parent could protect the child by not sending them off to wander freely around a mall. It seems if you really wanted to protect your 14-year-old, you'd sort of observe them a little more carefully. So
unfortunately, parents don't do that.
Well,
okay. Well, so before, so I have a motion to move the Dash One amendments into the bill. Are there any objections to moving the amendment in?
Representative Olson.
I make the
motion.
Move the Dash Ones.
Yeah. So, Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendments into, 3365.
Representative Olson moves the Dash 1s into 3365. Is there any objections to the amendments? Being then so ordered.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3365 as amended to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Olson moves House Bill 3365 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to be a yes today, but I want to reserve my right to be a no on the floor. Thanks.
Okay, call the roll, please.
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Representative Greenlee?
No.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Leininger?
Aye.
Did you get that? Aye.
Representative Schultz?
Aye.
Representative Springer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Williamson?
Aye.
Chair Barker?
Aye. Motion carries. Representative Olson will be the carrier. Open a work session, House Bill 3399.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, House Bill 3399 comes to you from Representative Nathanson. We heard this on March 31st, and this bill requires justices of the peace and municipal court judges to hold a Juris Doctorate degree or a certificate of judicial development, and specifies that judges and courts of records must be members of the Oregon State Bar. Additionally, the measure requires that those courts make and keep audio recordings or transcripts of all criminal proceedings for the prior 12 months. You have a variety of amendments before you. Now walk through them. They're all ready to go. All of these amendments have an indeterminate fiscal impact. Your information. The dash three amendments clarify which course must be completed in lieu of possessing a Juris Doctorate degree. So it would allow you to complete a course. We had the incorrect course listed in the underlying bill. We fixed that with the dash threes. The dash fours clarify that only a misdemeanor or felony criminal proceeding must be recorded. Violations would not. The proposed dash five amendments remove the emergency clause and specify the operative dates. The proposed dash six amendments offer a one-time extension of 12 months in which the judge must obtain certification. It requires the justice of peace or a municipal court judge to request the extension from the presiding judge in the judicial district in which that court is located. We also have the proposed dash sevens, which allow completion of an educational equivalent course and allows the presiding judge in the judicial district to determine equivalence.
So, just a question, Chan.
Yes.
Okay, so dash sevens, does that also reflect misdemeanors and felonies within JPs and also munis?
The dash sevens only do the educational equivalents, I believe. You would need the dash fours in addition to that.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Does it still require every member of the bar?
No. Representative Krieger does not.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, Representative Krieger, could you repeat that question? I didn't hear it.
I want to know if it still required them to be a member of the state bar. She said no.
Thank you.
This is the equivalent course in dash three, right?
Yeah.
Just a thought here. I mean, if that's the case of what the dash threes are reflecting, I'm not aware of any justice of peace or municipal court that addresses felonies, because that usually always goes to the circuit court. So.
The dash four say if it's a misdemeanor or a felony charge, it has to be recorded. So,
all right. Mr. Chair, I move that dash three amendments into House Bill 3399.
We have a motion to move the dash threes in. Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash four amendments into House Bill 3399.
There's a motion to move the dash fours in. Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash five amendments into House Bill 3399.
Representative Williams moves the dash five amendments into 3399. Are there any objections? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash six amendments into House Bill 3399.
Representative Williams moves the dash six amendments. Are there any objections?
Mr. Chair, last but not least, I move the dash sevens into House Bill 3399.
Representative Williams moves the dash sevens into House Bill 3399. Any objections? Seeing none, so
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3399 to the floor with the due pass recommendation as amended.
Representative Williams moves House Bill 3399 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I initially was going to vote yes on this bill, but now with all the additional amendments that we've just plugged into it, I don't know. I'm going to be a no.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, I was exact opposite. I was originally skeptical, but there's been a lot of work into these amendments. I know it's a little weird when we have to adopt three, four, five, six, and seven, but I feel pretty good about this bill and appreciate all the work going into
it. Okay, thank you. No further discussion. Call the roll, please.
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Representative Greenwood?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Leininger?
Aye.
Representative Post?
No.
Representative Representative Springer?
No.
Vice Chair Olson?
No.
Vice Chair Williamson?
Yes.
Chair Barker?
Yes. Motion carries. Representative Williamson, will you carry that for us?
Representative Nathanson.
Oh, Nathanson, okay. Yes. Representative Nathanson.
We need to get some questions ready for her, though.
Yeah.
About the amendments.
Okay, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2704. And colleagues, this is the bill that allows citizen filming the police. We were trying to get that straightened up. We're having a lot of difficulty with the language. There's been several amendments. And what my desire is today that we adopt the dash 5 amendments, which are the ones I submitted, and that we will get this, we'll move it out, and I will work with the Senate to fix, to get it so that it works well. Right now there's a lot of, the problem has to do with the audio recording. I want to make it clear that the intent is that that people will be allowed to film the police without threat of being arrested, but there's problems with surreptitious recording of police officers. For example, at lunchtime, there's a problem with somebody using a directional microphone that can film somebody down the street that's talking. The officers are trying to talk how to safely enter a house on a search warrant. There's a few other problems, but so I would like to move the bill, and we'll get it fixed on the Senate side, or if we can't get it fixed when it comes back for concurrence, we won't concur.
All right. Mr. Chair, I move the dash 5 amendments into House Bill 2704.
Representative Williamson moves the dash 5 amendments in House Bill 2704. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Sword.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2704 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Williamson moves House Bill 2704 as amended to the floor with the due pass. Are there any objections? Representative? Springer, you want to vote on that?
Thank you. A vote would be nice. Okay. I am going to be a no today, not because I think cameras are a bad idea. I think that they can be a great idea. I've brought up a couple points when we've had testimony here and been discussing this bill, and I'm anxious to see where we get to. I may end up a yes on the floor, but I still have a ton of concerns, and they're not for the police officer. They're for everybody else. Yes. And so we haven't sorted through that to my satisfaction yet.
A lot of thank you, and there are a lot of concerns. That's right. Call the roll, please.
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Representative Greenwood?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Leininger?
Aye.
Representative Post?
No.
Representative Springer?
No.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Williamson?
Aye.
Chair Barker?
Aye. Motion carries. I'll carry the bill. Open a work session, House Bill 2776.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, House Bill 2776 comes to us from Representatives Parrish and Representatives Taylor. We first heard this on March 25th of 2015. The bill allows a peace officer to apply to a circuit court judge for an ex parte emergency protective order and provides that the court may enter the order if the court finds probable cause to believe that an officer has responded to a domestic disturbance which requires mandatory arrest, the person is in immediate danger of abuse by a family or household member, and an emergency protective order is necessary to prevent the person from suffering further abuse. The bill states that an emergency protective order expires 5 days after entry and provides that the violation of the order constitutes contempt of court. We are considering the proposed dash 1 amendments today that provide that a peace officer must have the consent of a victim to apply for an emergency protective order. They state that the order expires 7 days rather than 5 from the day the court signs the order and specify the court procedures in the event the order is violated. There is a minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact. We're ready to move with the dash 1s.
Okay, thank you. And colleagues, one of the reasons they extended it to 7 days rather than 5 was so a person had time. If the victim is assaulted on a Friday night, courts are closed over the weekend, so this would give adequate time for the order to take place to protect the victim of the crime. So on.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash 1 amendments into House Bill 2776.
Representative Williamson moves the dash 1s into House Bill 2776. Are there any objections?
Sorry, Mr. Chair. Sure. I'm really sorry to complicate these things. So when we say 7 days, generally speaking, my understanding is under 10 days, weekends are excluded. So is that 7 days? Just
7 days straight.
Seven calendar days.
Does it say that in the statute?
It does.
Thank you.
Is there any objections to the Dash One amendments? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2776 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Williams moves House Bill 2776 to the floor as amended with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. We'll have Representative Taylor carry the bill or co-carry with Representative Parrish. So I'm going to open a work session. Just a minute here. Okay. Open a work session, House Bill 2936.
Chair Barker and members of the committee, House Bill 2936 comes to us from the Committee on Health Care. We first heard this bill on March 19th. This is the sobering facilities bill. We have the proposed Dash 14 amendments before the committee, which have a minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact. They combine the Dash 8 and Dash 13 amendments. The Dash 8 amendments define sobering facility to state that it can either be a standalone or part of a larger facility that contracts with or is affiliated with an addiction treatment provider approved by the Oregon Health Authority, and state that the provider must provide consultation, training, and advice, and enter into a written agreement with a facility that includes a plan to make referrals to the treatment facility. And the Dash 13 amendments amend the definition of sobering facility to list places of acutely intoxicated person may be taken if under the influence in a public place. They allow a sobering facility employee to discharge an admitted person who is in danger to themselves or others, provided the person is discharged within 24 hours. And as I said, the 14s combine these two amendments, and that's what we're ready to move on.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 14 amendments into House Bill 2936.
Representative Williams moves the Dash 14 amendments into House Bill 2936. Is there any discussion?
The requirement of being affiliated with, was there any discussion how that's going to work in our rural communities that we don't have the people to be affiliated with?
I think it would be the nearest mental health facility.
So, I'm sorry, I don't understand the question. If there's...
Well, let's say you're going to have one in Brookings.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have a hospital there. You don't have a mental health facilities. So who are they going to affiliate with, even in the county?
Well, that is not mentioned in the bill, but it does state that in order for them to qualify under this bill, they would have to have a contract or an affiliation with an addiction treatment provider that's approved by the OHA. So it's any addiction treatment provider that is approved by them.
Any further discussion on the Dash 14? Yeah, that's okay. We're not going to take testimony.
All right.
Dash 14 has been moved. No objections. Ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2936 as amended to the Committee on Rules without recommendation.
Representative Williams moves House Bill 2936 as amended to the Committee on Rules with no recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections?
Is this going to be the third committee for this bill?
Yep.
And from there, it'll go to Ways and Means?
I don't know where it'll go.
Is there any reason it's not going on the floor?
Yeah, it needs more work. Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. I apologize to people who signed up to testify that we're moving the bill to the Rules Committee, and so we're just getting the work done today. 34.
We had testimony.
Open a work session, House Bill 3408.
Yes, Chair Barker, members of the committee. House Bill 3408 is sponsored by Representative Gorsuch. We have no revenue impact, and we do have a fiscal statement issued for the purposes of transferring this to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, if you should choose to do so. We don't have any amendments before us today. House Bill 3408 provides an additional $100,000 out of the general fund for the biennium beginning July 1st, 2015, to the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training for the purposes of providing fifth and sixth grade students the opportunity to explore careers in law enforcement. The funds are additionally intended to make students familiar with the multiple aspects of law enforcement and other skills crucial for law enforcement. House Bill 3408 declares an emergency and is effective July 1st, 2015.
Representative Gorsuch, you want to tell us briefly about your bill?
Okay. Thank you, Chair Barker, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Chris Gorsuch. I'm from House District 49, and I will try and make this brief. As a former police officer and also a criminal justice educator for a number of years, I've been very moved by the different narratives that have been coming out of the recent debate over public safety and law enforcement professionalism. Suspicion of government institutions and likewise some of the communities they serve has driven a gulf that is, if anything, getting larger between those two groups due to misunderstandings and breakdowns of communication. Addressing this challenge is certainly not easy, as many of you know, and will not be solved by any one single solution. So while there isn't a magic bullet or a magic pill, I have a proposal that I believe will at least begin sorting out some of these issues and help to bridge that divide. So, and I must say that I came up with this actually through the suggestion of DPSST Director Gablix. It was a discussion that we were having, so I can't claim this. He actually brought it up himself. But he mentioned this comment, this concept to me, and I thought it was really the sort of thing that we could do that would be proactive and long-term in changing the complexion of our law enforcement community and hopefully improving community policing overall. So the idea is what is referred to as a changing our perceptions camp, or a cop camp, if you will. And the idea is to bring young people from all backgrounds to cop camp so that we can illuminate the real work of law enforcement officers, but also encourage a new generation of leadership that can provide innovative solutions to areas of problem and conflict that we currently face. Now, the main thing to take from this, and I won't read the rest of my remarks, but the main thing to take from this is that we will always have a certain group of folks that self-select into law enforcement. I was one of those people back in high school. But what we want to do is expose kids from all class levels and from all communities across the board, so communities of color and in the hopes that by seeing what the police really do by going to this camp at DPSST, more kids from all across the board will be inspired to work in law enforcement. And by having more folks from all around our communities come into law enforcement, that hopefully things would improve with time. And thank you very much. I am willing to answer any questions.
Anybody have any questions, Representative?
So, Representative Gorsuch.
Yes, sir.
What are you seeing a ballpark figure for the price on this?
You know, I think, don't get me completely locked into this, but I think it was somewhere in the, I thought $10,000 range, but I'm not sure. DPSST Director Gablix would know that exact figure.
Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I'm looking in the right place here,
yes.
The bill talks about $100,000.
Okay. That would be more accurate than my memory. Okay. Yes. Right.
Okay. Any further questions?
Just follow up.
Yes, please.
Lynn County Sheriff's Office, one of the counties that I work with down there in my house district, has a search and rescue cadet program.
Right.
And they are extremely effective, and they really, it's like a little boot camp is what it is, but they get some outstanding candidates that actually end up becoming reserves and then eventually deputies. Does Multnomah County have anything like that? Do you know?
Yes, they do. They have, I believe they have explorers, and they also have search and rescue explorers.
Okay.
And I did that when I was in high school, and then I was a reserve. The hope is that we will get other folks that don't necessarily go into those areas, because I think it could be a really enriching experience.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3408 to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Williams moves House Bill 3408 to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Open a public, we're open a work session on House Bill 3406.
Yes, Chair Barker, members of the committee, House Bill 3406 came to us from Representative Gorsuch as it was introduced. We have no revenue impact. We do have an indeterminate fiscal statement issued on this bill. And we do have a proposed Dash 1 amendment before us, which completely replaces the measure. So what that proposed Dash amendment does is it adds a new subsection D to ORS 181.685, which addresses the Center for Policing Excellence. This new subsection D includes in its primary purposes of the center, assisting with recruiting and community outreach. The proposed Dash 1 amendment preserves the emergency clause, and the bill would be effective on passage.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendments into House Bill 3406.
Representative Williams moves the Dash 1 amendments into House Bill 3406. Is there any discussion?
What was the date of the amendments, Mr. Chair?
The date of the amendment?
4/15. 4/15.
This one says.
Are there any objections to the amendment? It's ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3406 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation and to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Williamson moves House Bill 3406 as amended to the floor with the due pass and on to Ways and Means. Prior reference to Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections?
I still haven't figured out what the problem is. This particular bill. What this bill wants to address.
What this bill wants to address, it wants to have two people working out of the police excellence over at DPSST, Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, to do outreach and recruiting, essentially trying to get people for sheriffs, local city police, state police, anybody at all. Just, it's kind of an adult version of what the bill we just heard, except we're not going to run a camp, but they'll be out, be able to go to job fairs and things like that.
Okay.
Are there any objections to the bill as amended? So are. Open a. Yes, we can stand at ease for a few minutes. Call the committee back to order. House Bill 2316 is going to be rolled to tomorrow. We have to catch up some more paperwork on that. And now I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2310.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, House Bill 2310 provides that the Department of Corrections must consider a lesser or greater included offense of a crime for which the sentence was imposed and any other crime in the same county designated as part of the same criminal episode when computing sentence. Excuse me. The bill states that incarcerated persons shall receive credit for time served in jail after arrest and before the commencement of a probationary sentence when probation ordered as part of a downward dispositional departure, conditional discharge, and presumptive sentence, or as part of a diversion program or specialty court program. The bill provides that unless the court expressly orders otherwise, a person may not receive pre-sentence incarceration credit for time served in jail if the crime is not directly related to the crime for which the current sentence is being imposed, or for violation of conditions of probation, parole, or post-prison supervision for a crime not directly related to the crime for which the current sentence is being imposed. It applies to sentencing proceedings occurring on or after the effective date of the act, declares an emergency, and is effective on passage. We do have proposed Dash 1 amendments before the committee today. The proposed Dash 1 amendments require the prosecuting attorney and defendant to consent prior to giving a defendant credit on an unrelated crime. They eliminate the conditional discharge language and allow a sentencing judge to limit credit for time served given to inmates sentenced on a downward dispositional departure. We're still waiting on the paperwork for the Dash 1s.
Okay, thank you. I'll call Heidi Stewart and Gail Meyer, please.
Good Thank you, members of the committee and Chair Barker. Gail Meyer, on behalf of the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association, thanking this committee for resurrecting House Bill 2310. This is a resurrection of a bill in 2014 that was sponsored by Representative Wally Hicks. It was 4098. And at the time, that bill related to crime. And so these provisions here addressing credit for time served were in that bill and pretty much were consensus product from several work group sessions with stakeholders at the table. But then the 2014 bill relating to crime attracted a bunch of other stuff and actually got out of the House, but hit the scree on the Senate side and didn't make it across the line. So House Bill 2310 is a resurrection of those provisions. We do support the bill as introduced, and we would prefer the bill as introduced pass without the Dash 1 amendments, which I understand to be sponsored or introduced at the request of the district attorneys. Just by way of explaining to the committee, there's myriad of ways why credit for time served can get complicated and screwed up. Sometimes the defendant is in custody on a lower offense, but actually ends up pleading to a higher offense because it turns out that injuries are more severe, and so he can't. The defendant couldn't get credit for time served because it's for. He ultimately pleads to a higher offense. The reverse can be true. He can be lesser includeds are allowed right now in certain circumstances. But sometimes you recharacterize the events. So sometimes the defendant might be charged with a robbery or some kind of a assault of tussle, but those don't really fit. And so then you end up agreeing to a separate charge. You recharacterize it as a coercion or something of that nature. So the parties in a case often have to collaborate together, sometimes to mold a resolution that fits. The problem is that the current existing credit for time served statute is just very, very limited in terms of what kind of credit is allowed. And House Bill 2310 is written with the effort of maximizing the ability of the court to allow for credit for time served. With respect to the Dash 1 amendment, there's one instance on the Dash 1 starting at line 5. It inputs a provision into the bill would allow a court to allow for credit for time served even if the defendant were in custody for crimes that are not directly related to the crime for which the sentence is ultimately imposed. You get that a lot if someone's in custody on a probation they're in on a probation hold, they have a new case out there, they can be acquitted on the case, or they have to do certain time on the case, but then they want to give credit for time served for time on the probation. What the Dash 1 would say is that a court may enter credit for time served in those instances only if the prosecuting attorney and the defendant agree to the order. I'd submit to the committee the defendant will always agree to the order. After all, we're talking about credit for time served. And so, therefore, by structuring this where there has to be agreement between the DA and the defense lawyer, essentially means it would be a DA veto, essentially, because the defendant will always agree. I mean, why would the defendant not agree to credit for time served? So that's the one instance where the Dash 1 amendment essentially would insert language that would take discretion away from the court and essentially put it in the hands of the district attorney to agree or not agree. I will admit that on Section 2 of the bill, starting on line 29, and all the new language in there, the Dash 1 addresses some of those provisions, eliminates some, qualifies the other. I'd like to submit that I'm not so sure there isn't a drafting error. In two of those provisions, there's lacking the phrase, unless the sentencing judge orders otherwise. So the presumption would be credit for time served shall be allowed. And two of the provisions are lacking the phrase, unless the sentencing judge orders otherwise. And we think that that phrase should be inserted. And if inserted, we think that that would improve the bill and would make the dash one not necessary. Essentially, what it would do is it would flip the presumption that was that credit for time served would be allowed, but it would give the sentencing judge the discretion to order otherwise. So, with that qualifying language, we would support the bill as originally introduced. Thank you.
With the qualifier that would allow the judge to decide whether or not whether they could have credit for any of the time.
Chair Barker, yes. And this specifically is in Section 2, Subsections 1A and Subsection 2. Yeah.
Thank you.
But that amendment does not currently exist, correct?
Chair Barker, Representative Barton, correct. I didn't see the issue until I studied the dash one. Yeah.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Heidi Stewart, Assistant Director with the Department of Corrections, and I'm here today to testify in support of House Bill 2310 as originally introduced. My testimony is redundant, so I'm not going to repeat what you've just heard, but just want to get on the record that we do support it, again, 2310 as originally introduced.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, Brad Berry and Wally Hicks, please.
Good afternoon, Chair Barker, members of the committee. I'm Wally Hicks. Sorry?
Welcome back, Commissioner.
Oh, Council, actually, yes. Wally Hicks, I am a private citizen, actually, today, very happily so. I drove, but I heard this bill was coming up, so I had to drive 3 hours gladly to see it through because this was a bill that took people have been working on this for years, and the problem that it solves is really easy to describe. It's kind of a surprising feature of our justice system that when a judge pronounces that someone is going to the Department of Corrections, nobody in the courtroom really knows for sure how long the defendant is going to be spending at the Department of Corrections. It's a loophole in the law that people have been trying to fix for years. I mean, this bill, this concept was like Bill Taylor's great white whale. He chased this for... and last session, 2014, we actually got just about everybody imaginable within the criminal justice system behind this bill and this concept. There were the prosecutors, the defense, the courts even, the Department of Corrections, and the House of Representatives. And it didn't pass. I think there were a variety of explanations for that. Basically, the clock ran out is the way I describe it on the short session. But it's back. Hallelujah. And so I am here to hopefully inspire the committee. And the reason why, by the way, that this thing has not been fixed before is because, like I said, it's an easy problem to describe, but extraordinarily complex to fix. And even Gail gave us a sense of that right now. And so the level of technical detail on this bill was pretty much unprecedented in my experience. But we got some incredible masterminds came together, especially last session, experts in the field of the criminal justice system and the code. And they came to a very, very fine product. And I think we've encapsulated that for the most part here. It sounds like there's amendments being considered. And from what just my discussion with Brad, that matches my recollection of what the work group had agreed to during the course of last year. So that's based on my recollection. And other than that, I hope that nobody throws a technical question at me because I've since exhausted all that information. And so I'll turn it over to Brad for that reason.
Brad. Chair Barker, members of the committee, my name is Brad Beer. I'm the Amhill County District Attorney, and I also serve as co-chair of the Oregon District Attorneys Association Legislative Committee. If I might just, and I know we're pressed for time, so I'll try to be quick. As former Representative Hicks mentioned, this was his bill. This was one of those, as the DAs got involved originally, ended up with one of those no good deed goes unpunished. We had seen an issue that came up that Gail talked about in that if somebody, for example, is arrested for a burglary in a
theft and then ultimately pleads out to a criminal mischief, which was never originally charged, they would get no credit for time served for that criminal mischief. They'd waive grand jury, plead to this odd charge, and then they wouldn't get credit. And candidly, it violated the taint fair doctrine. That just isn't fair to anybody. And so as Representative Hicks at the time introduced this, we saw that as an issue that we could go after and utilize this bill. And then the bill began to morph and started to get into areas of credit for all kinds of different things, which ultimately resulted in the work group that Wally led the discussion there. We had Department of Corrections there talking, and as I said earlier, correcting me often on some of the presumptions I had about what happened later. And of course, as Wally mentioned, this deals in part with truth in sentencing. So when we get done with the sentencing hearing, everybody should leave the court having some idea what happens. The Dash 1 amendments were, I think, do embody the basis of the agreement that came out of the work group. We did work for many hours trying to battle through some of the pieces that were there, and I think it's there. What I would like to do is there are a couple of concerns I just want to put out there for real quickly. On page 1, section 1, sub 2, little a, C, it talks about credit for time served. It does not seem to deal with the potential, and Representative Barker, I apologize for not bringing this up earlier, I didn't see it, of consecutive sentencing. So, for example, if somebody is sentenced to, let's use the robbery example, and you have two different victims, consecutive sentencing is authorized. They've been in jail for 45 days. They would essentially get 2 days for each. They'd get 2 days for count one against victim Brad, and then 45 days for count two against victim Wally, even if the judge felt it should be consecutive sentencing. And it appears that that would be mandated, that you'd get dual credit. And I'm not sure that that was intended. Just a couple of other things that I do want to mention. I deal a lot with felony probations and the like, and what this bill, you can tell, would do is sets forth what's going to happen, in part at least, with credit for time served for somebody who's revoked on probation after a downward departure. So the presumptive sentence was a prison sentence. Court did a downward departure to probation. Oftentimes on those cases that we deal with, we're dealing with folks who are then placed into intensive supervision, kind of like getting out of Measure 57 or treatment courts with now high-risk drug courts, for example. They end up in intensive supervision. And during that time, it is not uncommon that they are repeatedly sanctioned for violations of terms of their probation or terms of the treatment court, for example. This would say that they would get credit for that time or could mandate it, credit for that time. My point being this, that in fact, oftentimes, now the move, I interrupt myself, now the move is to sanction more and not return people to court as quickly. And consequently, we get people who are often getting 30, 60, 90 days of sanction time that they've done, sanction after sanction after sanction after sanction. And then should that be credit for time served once they now get returned or revoked and go to do the presumptive prison time from before? This would limit, the Dash 1 would limit that to 90 days maximum. The problem there, and I mentioned this to Wally before we came in, is that as you may recall from 3194, we now have transitional leave that went from 30 to 90 days. And with this, it would say, so for the first 90 of sanction units utilized on probation, and obviously a problematic probation, you could effectively go into prison with 90 days credit up front, getting 90 days on the back end, and end up with 6 months of credit, effectively, of time that you did piecemeal on the installment plan on probation, and then with the time coming off the back end. Many of these offenders on downward departures are going out on presumptive sentences of someplace between 12, 13, and 24 months. You take 6 months off of that, and it impacts the ability, once they're at DOC, for example, to do programming because they don't have sufficient time there, let alone the original intent of the presumptive sentence was you're going to do this period of time in prison. So just those observations. Again, I'll loop back. The Dash 1, I think, reflects the end of our discussions that we had with the leadership of Representative Hicks last year, and we would support it with the Dash 1 with those concerns.
Any questions?
Brief comment, if I may, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate you coming back, Wally. You blew up a bunch of things right on your way out. This is one issue, PSRB. Speedy trial is another one I remember you for very fondly. It's nice to have you back.
And so, Ms. Bradbury, on the Gail talked about a fix on the first one, which was not a, I don't think that was a drafting error, but it sounded like her suggestion to correct that, which would that alleviate the need for the dash one amendments if we were able to change that?
Chair Barker, no, not completely. It does, I think she is accurate that if you include that language that she suggested, it does essentially flip the presumption. So the presumption is credit, the court gets to decide. That's the way it is today, not the presumption, but the court currently decides how much of any time served as a condition of probation is given for credit for time served. I think she's right. That's not a bad part. However, the dash two does eliminate paragraph two at the bottom of page two, section or paragraph two at the very bottom there. That deals with specialty courts and all that. And that was, again, that had been negotiated out as we ought not to be even be talking about that because of the potential of other sanctions and things like that through that period. So I don't think it fixes all of them. It also doesn't put a cap on the 90 days, which also would be a concern. You could have somebody who's on a downward departure. And on the grid, I hope I'm not getting too technical, but on the grid, they could actually be a 180 over 90. Court could authorize additional sanction units beyond the lower number, the 90, and they could get time up to 180 days. Then, effectively, they'd be forced to have that full 6 months credit going into the, once we revoke them on probation, off of probation, send them to the presumptive prison sentence that they avoided up front. So I don't think it fixes, the short answer is no, it doesn't fix all of the concerns. It does aid in that it leaves the credit for time served issue with the court.
So that would, in your opinion, would that improve the bill to have her change?
Insofar as it's, and if I remember exactly where she had it, insofar as it is added to, I think, 1A, because it's already under 1B, section 2-1A, and then section 2-1B, add it there, I think it adds to it, yes.
Any questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Just in case.
Jessica, can you come up for a minute?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jessica, can you comment on Gail's comments about the drafting?
Sure. Jessica Menifee from Legislative Council, Chair Barker, Vice Chair Williamson. My recollection from a number of work groups is that all of those, unless the sentencing judge orders otherwise, were the subject of extensive negotiation. So those are all policy considerations, and whether or not they appear in there is, again, going to be up to whatever party or whatever policy concern is requesting them.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, could you draft those in? Can we get that drafted?
Adding them? Chair Barker, sorry. Of course. I can add anything you wish as long as it's constitutional, of course.
Darn, it's a constitution. You handcuffed me once again. Okay, please do that, and then we'll close the work session on this, or the public hearing on this today. We'll look forward to a work session tomorrow.
Mr. Chair, can I say one
more
thing?
Yes, you can, please.
While Jessica's sitting up here, I just want to thank you for all your hard work. I know we've buried you over and over again, and you've been fantastic. So
still
I just
smiling.
I know. I don't. Yeah, really. So I just want to make sure that this committee thanks you publicly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate that. Thanks.
This is the public hearing, House Bill 2010. And we'll stand at ease for a moment again.
I'm sitting at ease.
Committee's come back to order. Next item on the agenda, we'll open a public hearing, House Bill 2313, called Tori Lynn and J.L. Wilson.
Good afternoon, Chair Barker. For the record, I'm J.L. Wilson, representing Linn County on 2313 with a dash one amendment. And this is a very simple concept. The dash one amendment is simply the minor in possession statutes as it applies to alcohol superimposed for marijuana. And so what you have here in front of you on the dash one is essentially the alcohol version of minor in possession statutes applied to marijuana. And just to walk through the bill just briefly, what it basically says is it's a Class B violation for any person under 21 years of age to attempt to purchase or acquire marijuana items, and also for purpose of this section, personal possession of marijuana includes the acceptance or consumption of marijuana items. And all of that, as is with the MIP statutes for alcohol, is a Class B violation. It moves up to a Class A violation if the person involved in the section by reason of personal possession while operating a motor vehicle. That is a Class A violation, again, consistent exactly with our alcohol statutes. And I think, as my colleague here will testify, you know, the issue isn't so much, you know, the violations, but is the fact that it triggers a referral to juvenile departments in various counties to begin the process of drug and alcohol counseling and rehabilitation and that type of thing. So this is brought to you by Linn County. It was seen a prevalence of this particular issue in the county, and this seemed like a way to get at it. So thank you.
Chair Barker, for the record, my name is Tori Lynn. I'm the director for the Linn County Juvenile Department. I'm also the president-elect for the Oregon Juvenile Department Directors Association. I think I've submitted testimony, or testimony has been submitted, on behalf of the Directors Association. I would like to share a few comments today around this bill. The sooner that we can intervene with youth, the better. And so the opportunities that come up for MIP alcohols, and in this case, the MIP marijuana, again, gives a referral to the juvenile department and gives us an opportunity to have a conversation with the youth and family and determine whether or not there are issues that should be looked into further. Just a recent study from Duke University looked at 1,000 individuals, and they followed these individuals from age birth until 38. What they found was that those who used marijuana more than once weekly displayed more severe intelligence, impaired intelligence, slower reaction time, slower attention spans, poor listening skills. People who begin using marijuana prior to the age of 18, they actually can look at brains, a healthy brain and one that's used marijuana, and there are differences in those brains, in the gray and the white matter. It changes things like around executive functioning, mood control, memory, attention span, impulse control, organization, time management skills. Thinking of juveniles, they already have those problems prior to doing any of those things. So teenagers who use marijuana on a daily basis have increased rates of depression, anxiety, psychosis later in life. Now, I think science would say that, you know, they can't really determine that marijuana causes a psychosis or if people with psychosis are more likely to use marijuana, but there's definitely a correlation between those two things. Currently, with the legalization of marijuana, it has an impact on the perception of risk to our teens. Recent data from this Oregon Student Wellness Survey looks at the risk, the perceived risk of kids using marijuana as declining. In an example, in Linn County, in 2012, our 11th graders, 59% perceived a risk of using marijuana more than once weekly. In 2014, that number has dropped to 41.8%. Also, the numbers have dropped for grades 6 through 8. They were about 8 or 9% dropping. Still, students report that their parents don't approve of the use of marijuana. So you have parents who are saying it's not okay to use, but again, you know, where we're at as a state, that perception of risk is dropping because of the legality of that. In my own county, I've had numerous conversations with school administrators regarding this issue and their frustrations around being able to be more effective, I think, with youth who come to school and they're not in possession of marijuana but under the influence. They certainly have issues that they can suspend or expel those students for. But again, not having a third party come in and at least take a look at things and determine whether or not there's continuing issues that need to be addressed with kids. Schools are much more likely to have kids come back sooner when there's other interventions in place, drug testing or some other types of supervision that can help them be successful in that school setting. Having no law against marijuana, being under the influence of marijuana, has been a hole in the system. This is an opportunity to correct that, making it illegal for anyone under 21 to be under the influence. It's an opportunity to protect our youth, and it recognizes that even though marijuana is being legal in this state, that it still doesn't mean it's not harmful to the kids that we work with. That's all I have. Thank you.
Any questions?
So, can you talk to me about how this relates to the medical use by young people who may be using it to treat, you know, pain or symptoms related to chemotherapy or another condition?
Chair Barker, Representative Linger. I don't know that I can answer that fully. I would say that if it's under a prescription, that's allowable. I guess the other thing that I don't see in this bill is around with alcohol. You're allowed to, as a parent, serve that to your child in your own home. I don't believe that fits in this bill either. So I don't know that I have a good answer for your question.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2313. We'll have a work session tomorrow. Any further business?
You should go over this list last time. Everything's over.
Yeah, we need to carry.
It's over.
The work session, yes. Okay. You want to read all these into the record?
I probably want to read them so we can
hear. Okay. I'll just go back over what we, in case we had earlier. We're carrying over House Bill 2310, work session only. House Bill 2313, work session. House Bill 2315, public hearing and possible work session. 2316, public hearing, possible work session. And then work sessions carried over on House Bill 2224, 2356, 2425, 2571, 2647, 3040, 3388, 3437, and 3498.
2902.
Hey, Chair, do we have a 5 o'clock deadline tomorrow?
It's dead.
We have a 5 o'clock deadline.
Yeah, except those we rolled over.
Is it a 5 o'clock deadline?
I was thinking tomorrow is a 5 o'clock deadline for all bills.
I will have to check. I'm not positive about that. I plan to zip through them.
I think you can get through by 5, but I think
we will. Okay. That would be vital, though, if we don't. Yeah. We'll have everything without this. Okay. Meeting's adjourned. Thank you, committee. We'll have everything without this. Okay. Meeting's adjourned. Thank you, committee.